Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
They did a research study on premarital couples.
This is Focus on the Family Minute with Dr. Randy Schrader.
And they discussed a differing opinion, you know, kind of a disagreement. And then they coded their communication for, I think it was an hour and 15 minutes. And then they came back 5 years later to find which of those couples were unhappy, which were separated, which were even divorced, you know, before 5 years. And what they discovered as the common denominator were interruptions. Because when we interrupt, we need to turn up the volume to get our point across. And so, in answer to your question, and we all can do that. I can do that. You guys are great communicators. And so it's easy to interrupt and want to get our point out there. And we just need to pause.
Hear more from Dr. Randy Schrader at FamilyMinute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Let's pay a visit to Rich London, the mattress specialist in Paso Robles.
Well, Gary, as you can see, I'm packed. You walk in here, there's beds everywhere. I have a lot of new beds in, and I have my regular beds. I've got my Chatham & Wells, which are top-notch beds. Those are the high-end beds from Gottschalk's, and they're incredible beds. I've got those on sale. I've got my Eastman House beds on sale, whether it's the latex or the memory foam.
If you want it, you'll probably find it at the mattress specialist, 13th and Riverside, Paso Robles.
Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, brought to you by Frontier Floors and Window Coverings at 830 21st Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-7878 or online at frontierfloors.net.
The Rest of the Story. It was more than 150 years ago that John Mumford was an itinerant Methodist preacher. The topic upon which he preached most often was the demon rum. John Mumford was a vociferous advocate of temperance. Now, there are two definitions of temperance in the dictionary, one which implies moderation and the other unequivocal abstinence. Reverend Mumford's was the latter posture. The only good booze was no booze. John's family deeply believed in him and in the cause that he preached. No sacrifice was too great in the course of sounding the alarm, the warning of the physical and spiritual threat of alcohol to the lives of all it touched. The temperance preachers in those days relied on every available gimmick, every conceivable method of cajoling and shaming and even outright frightening their listeners from the enemy, booze. Temperance meetings often rang with rancorous recitations such as, a grop seller sat by his barroom fire, foolish and fuddled his friends had gone, to wake in the morn to a drunkard's pain with bloodshot eyes and a reeling brain. Today we'd call it a guilt trip, and often it worked. And with each soul rescued from the damnation of demon rum, the temperance preachers were inspired to carry on. Rarely did they ever withdraw from the fight. But one day the Reverend Mumford did. It was a practical consideration. Although great was the need for temperance preaching, John decided the needs of his family came first. They'd be better fed on the wages of a coach builder. So John quit preaching and took up coach building. And yet it wasn't long before the pressures of private business kind of got to him. There were difficulties which he had not anticipated. There were financial hardships which he had not anticipated. After a while, John Mumford, a former soldier in the Battle of the Bottle, began bracing himself with an occasional glass of wine. And then two at a time. And before anyone knew what had happened, John Mumford was himself a full-fledged alcoholic. And I mean a blurry, bobbing, weaving, slurring, falling down, passed out cold, chronic drunk. Wife Sarah was deeply grieved, but I think the one that hurt most was John's daughter, Kathy. It was through her father's influence that she had developed religious zeal as a young girl, but now as a teenager, faced with the example of apparent hypocrisy, Kathy could so easily have been disillusioned. At least it should have discouraged her from marrying a preacher, but neither was the case. For the faith that her daddy had given her as a child held fast. And the heartache she now felt for him only inspired her to take up the sword which he had laid down. For when Kathy Mumford married Minister William Booth, they went out together and they preached and they prayed among those the rest of the world forgot. The risk Catherine Booth took made no human sense, but she trusted God beyond logic, and the improbable ministry which she and her husband built, you know as the Salvation Army. Only now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Buy the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veeley, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. I'm also an investigative reporter with Cal Coast News. Go to Cal Coast News. There is no paywall. And today I have Josh Friedman on the show. Josh and I have worked together for more than a decade. And Josh is a journalist and was down in the in Colombia at the Venezuela border, interviewing people from Venezuela. And before the top of the hour break, we were talking about a man that had told him he'd been in the oil industry. He showed evidence that he was with the oil industry. And so, Josh, what was he talking to you about?
Well, I haven't verified that, but he said that he was in the oil industry for 30 years or so, and he showed me a badge he had, and I think it said geodetic engineer on it. So presumably, if his story is true, he did some sort of mapping of land for, I guess, oil projects. And his main point was that he wanted Trump and the U.S. to come in and get involved and invest in the Venezuelan oil industry and to extract oil and to share the profits with the Venezuelan people. And it seems like that's starting to take place, as we were alluding to, but I don't know what all is going to happen. But he, unlike a lot of people who are criticizing Trump for the Maduro capture and saying, or attacking him for it, saying he just wants to take the oil, this man who, according to him, worked in the oil industry for 30 years, and I think he worked with Americans or had spent a little time in the U.S. and he spoke a little English. He basically was saying himself, come take the oil. I want you to take the oil. So it was an interesting and unexpected interview on the bridge. And in a sense, it was very representative of the whole situation, because you have this man who's living on the Venezuelan side, and despite presumably having decades of oil industry experience, he's literally walking into Colombia, then coming back by foot into Venezuela with a carton of eggs in some basket that he's rolling. And he stopped and gave an interview on the bridge. I had no idea that he was going to say what he was going to say. And toward the end, as I mentioned earlier, when I asked him, why are you saying this? Why are you not afraid to say it? He said, the fear is over. And he started getting to know how things are changing. And earlier in the interview, he was talking about how he expects a democratic transition to take place and how he wants there to be this transition period that involves new elections and Venezuela going in a democratic future.
And what did he specifically say he thought should happen with the oil industry, or did he?
He didn't get into details about it, but he said, and I guess most of the interview was not about the oil, although maybe I could track him down or get hold of him, and maybe we could do a follow-up more focused on oil. But he wanted the U.S. to get involved and to invest, and I think a lot of Venezuela's economic problems stem from the country not making use of its oil resources. It's number one oil reserve country in the world, and over the past couple decades during the Chavismo years, there's been a major lack of investment in oil infrastructure and maintenance of oil infrastructure, and I think a lot of people cite that as key reasons for why Venezuela is not able to tap into its vast oil resources. Although I heard people express the sentiments that the Venezuelan government finds it easier and would much rather run a giant drug trafficking operation than manage its oil resources and invest in the country's oil resources and maintain them to the level that they need to. But it would be interesting to hear more from this man on his perspective on what exactly he'd like to see happen with the Venezuelan oil industry.
And you brought up the drug industry. Can you describe a little bit about what your knowledge of through your interviews and research is of the drug industry in Venezuela?
I actually just published an interview on my personal YouTube channel a couple hours ago about that. It's a very hot topic for a number of reasons, not just Maduro's arrest. And Colombia is very intertwined in the situation because most of the cocaine or coca is not, I should say in general, the coca is not originating in Venezuela. It's originating in Colombia. And the primary region for it is this Catatumbo area that is not too far from that border region, and it's largely controlled right now by this group ELN, which is somewhat of a successor of FARC. For a long time, there was this very well-known armed communist drug trafficking group in Colombia called FARC, and they were at war with the Colombian government. There was a peace treaty about a decade ago, and FARC pretty much broke up. Some dissident members of FARC now form other groups, and they go back and forth across the border in and out of Colombia and Venezuela. And this ELN group, which is somewhat at war with the Colombian government right now, they and others, they're using locals to grow the coca, and they're moving a lot of it into Venezuela, and they process it into cocaine. Granted, it doesn't all go through Venezuela. There are routes out of Colombia, but there's been a ton of drug trafficking in and out of Venezuela, and that plays right into the Maduro arrests and indictments, as well as everything that's been happening in Venezuela as a whole. I've heard from countless Venezuelans over the years that it's a narco state or narco dictatorship, that the government largely operates off of drug money. It's not just a handful of people saying this. It's countless Venezuelans have told me that over the years.
And so that is largely also, though, why the U.S. was able to get a warrant and finally take Maduro into custody. Do many people believe that this is going to change, though, with the arrest of Maduro?
Well, I should also mention that it was interesting timing with respect to Colombia, because there's been this war of words between Trump and Gustavo Petro, the Colombian president, and that actually escalated, if not peaked, while I was there, not too long after Maduro's capture. And strangely enough, Maduro had essentially told Trump, come get me, and then Trump did, and Petro was basically repeating that. So I was calling it press row. I showed you on camera once all the media lined up outside the or near the bridge on the Colombian side of the border.
And then let me give a little antidote from that. So he's got his camera, he's got his phone, and we've got the FaceTime. So I'm looking at the border, and there were three tanks on the Colombia side of the border. And there was, I think, a CNN reporter trying to talk to a guy in a tank who was teasing her. He would pop his head out with a gun. She'd go to take a photo, and he'd pop back down. And it was comical. I thought it was embarrassing for the reporter.
Well, the whole thing had almost this fake feeling, because so many members of the international media were all lined up in the middle of this one street right next to the bridge, and there were the three tanks there. And then, interestingly, the last day that I was there on Sunday, the tanks weren't there. I don't know why. Anyway, when I was there in years past, they didn't have tanks there. But the situation has escalated in Colombia in a couple of regards. I'm not saying the U.S. is about to go to war with Colombia, or that Colombia's got a massive new drug war on its hands, but there is the continuous drug war in Colombia, and I actually got some insights into that, which I don't know if I can share them all, but I heard about the BBC the BBC trying to get the Colombian government to make an interesting statement as a show of force to Trump. So yeah, I came across a bunch of interesting things while I was down there, and the Colombian government is trying to show to the world that it's doing everything it can to eradicate this drug trafficking problem and to fight off these cartels and armed groups that still exist. Meanwhile, there's this war of words and tensions building between the U.S. and Colombia, but Colombia is much more of an ally to the U.S. than Venezuela had been in recent years.
But you are saying, though, that the drugs originate in Colombia, and then they go to
Yes, but they can also go, they can also leave Colombia by boat or up through the Darien Gap, that notorious smuggling, human trafficking, migrant caravan area that leads into Panama. So there are other routes, but this Colombian-Venezuelan border and both sides of the border are notorious for drug trafficking and being major drug routes. And this was all these criminal groups that operate in the area, or at least some of them or many of them, were very intertwined with the Venezuelan government, at least in the past, and probably still are largely, even though the U.S. is now exerting a lot of influence.
And what is going on currently with Colombia and the Trump is fighting the drug war. Where are we now with Trump and Colombia?
Well, I don't think there's any indication that Trump's going to invade Colombia. I don't think it's at that point, but it's, in my opinion, it's pretty foolish on the part of the Colombian president to tell Trump, come get me, after Maduro did the same and look how it ended for him. But we don't have, they're quite likely that Colombia is going to swing back in a more moderate or conservative direction when they have their next election, although I'm not totally in tune with the domestic politics there in Colombia, but speaking with some people, it sounded like that's quite likely. But Trump right now is exerting influence in Latin America in a whole variety of ways, and one of them politically is he's endorsing conservative and right-wing candidates, and he's quite clearly taking tough stances on leftist ones like Gustavo Petro in Colombia, and they've already clashed over immigration and other issues. It's not just the drug issue. In fact, the drug issue isn't really what it's not really what Trump and Petro were clashing over.
What were they primarily clashing over?
Well, there was this big incident, I don't remember in detail, where there was it the Colombian president's plane was turned around, or someone's plane was turned around, and there was a dispute over taking back illegal immigrants, I think it was. I'd have to fact check it, but this was months ago, and I think Colombia was refusing to take people that the U.S. was deporting, and it turned into some mini international fiasco.
I want to get back to some of your interviews. What did the young woman that you had that had worked as a prostitute, tell us a little bit about where her life is now. I know that you did a fundraising campaign for her, and there was a house built for her, or there is a house being built for her. What has happened in her life since you interviewed her back in 19?
Her name is Marianne Helen. We started getting this earlier. I thought that she was 17 when I interviewed her, and people were pretty touched by that or astonished. It turns out now she's saying she was 16, about to turn 17. And
Josh, we're going to start back with this after a word from our sponsors, and we'll get into what is going on with her life now.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks ending higher following strong earnings from the world's largest contract chip maker, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing, and two of Wall Street's biggest banks, Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs. Shares of TSMC jumped over 4% after reporting that its fourth quarter profit increased 35% year over year. And the U.S. and Taiwan have reached a trade deal that the U.S. Commerce Department said would drive a massive reshoring of America's semiconductor sector. The agreement would lower tariffs on goods from Taiwan to 15% and see Taiwanese semiconductor companies increasing financing for American operations by $500 billion. The Dow winners, Goldman Sachs, Boeing, and Caterpillar. The Dow decliners, IBM, Salesforce, and Microsoft. The Dow rising 293 points. The Nasdaq higher by 58. S&P 500 up 18. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Hey, I'm Mike Slater. My dad passed away at the age of 63. It's out of nowhere. Had a stroke. Super hard, obviously, for the whole family, but my dad had life insurance. This is why I have life insurance for my family, for my wife and four kids. And the best place to get life insurance is ethos.com, because you can do it in 10 minutes. And there's no medical exam and no blood test, just a few health questions. Get life insurance in 10 minutes so your family is protected. Ethos, E-T-H-O-S, ethos.com/Mike.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I recently had the best visit with Peter Lussier at Hearing Aid Specialists. He fixed my hearing aid, gave me an efficient hearing test, and adjusted my hearing aids using computer software. I've had my hearing aids for several years. I never felt they were working properly until Peter fixed the issues. The clarity and volume are wonderful now.
If you have hearing aids or need a hearing aid evaluation, call Hearing Aid Specialists of the Central Coast, 805-460-7385, 805-460-7385.
Do you worry about where to take your car for repairs? Who you can trust? Mike and his team at the Autobahn are a safe bet. Located in Templeton, behind the donut shop, just off Main Street. They service Mercedes, BMWs, Volkswagens, Porsches, and Audis. And the Autobahn is certified in those cars and in repairing Land Rovers, Volvos, and Mini Coopers. Call the Autobahn, 434-2200.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vealey, your host on Wednesday and Thursday. Today I have Josh Friedman on the show. We are talking about what is going on in Venezuela. Josh is a journalist. He has been down on the in Colombia on the border of Venezuela interviewing people in the area. He was down there for about, 2 weeks?
No, I was down there for a little more than 1 week this time.
And he had interviewed a young woman. He had gone there in 2019. And when she was 16, she was working as a prostitute on the border, sending money back to her family. He did some fundraisers, helped her out a bit after that, and he went down and talked to her about what is going on now. Tell us a little bit about what you learned that is going on with her currently.
So I'd briefly gone back. We had reunited briefly in 2020, late 2020, during COVID. It was a very bizarre time with the border closed. And at that point, it seemed like she was going back and forth between Colombia and Venezuela. Now she's outright living in Venezuela. And over the past 6 years, we've raised more than through the GoFundMe, about $5,000, but altogether more than $5,000 for her. And she's been building a home for herself. She's now a mother. She's got a daughter who was with her the whole time that she was visiting with me in Colombia just last week. She's building a home. The home is almost complete, and it's going to have a mini grocery store in it. Not sure if grocery store is really the right term. I'm not so familiar with these, but apparently they're pretty common in Venezuela where someone has a room in their house or some attachment to their house that functions as a small grocery store or some sort of store, and she'll be buying items, I guess, in bulk, and then selling them out of her home. That's her plan, and it's mostly complete from what I've seen. She sent me a bunch of photos and videos.
And so her life is much better. How does she feel about what happened with the arrest of Maduro and with the demands that Trump is putting on the government?
I know what she feels, but I'm not comfortable saying it right now. I actually have a recording of her saying it, but I am, given that she's living there in Venezuela, and she's not a traditional public figure, but she's got quite the presence on YouTube. Not in the way of her own channel, but so many people interested in her. So I'm not comfortable with putting that out there. If I have some discussions with her and some other people and we determine the time is right to put it out there, then I will. But I'll tell you this much, which gets back a little bit to what we were talking about earlier on this subject. There is a lot of fear. So a lot of people, I'd have to ask them off camera whether they support Maduro, against Maduro, for his capture, against his capture, for the Chavista government in Venezuela or not. And multiple times I heard things like, I hate Maduro, I hate the government, I can't think of anyone. I would ask, do you have any friends who support the Venezuelan government? I'm asking Venezuelans this. Do you have any family members who support the Venezuelan government? And multiple times I would hear things like, I don't have any friends who support the government. No one in my family supports the government except one aunt or one person in my family. I've heard that multiple times, where I ask someone not only whether or not they support the Venezuelan government, but do they have any friends or family who support the government? And based on conversations like that, as well as everyone who spoke to me on camera and off, on the border, in the border areas, it really seems like the vast majority of the Venezuelan population was against Maduro. But I can't say with certainty that they're all happy that the U.S. went in and extracted their president. But I certainly heard that from people, and I have multiple people on camera. I've already published at least a couple of those interviews where people are on camera saying that they're happy that Trump captured Maduro.
And what is your tell us how people can find your YouTube channel?
You can just type in my name, Josh Friedman, on YouTube.
And it comes up pretty easily? They're just because you have a common name.
It doesn't. Well, yeah, but there's a billionaire named Josh Friedman. He pops up, too. You can search at Nomad Journalist. You could type in youtube.com/@NomadJournalist or Josh Friedman, Nomad Journalist. It shouldn't be too hard to find me, because in terms of channels, I'm the biggest channel of a Josh Friedman on YouTube.
And Josh has done a lot of, he's gone to Ukraine and watched the wars. He was, during the Black Lives Matter protests, he was doing YouTube videos. He was actually, do you remember the one where you were assaulted? And he had called me and said, Will you watch what's happening? I want to have someone that, you know, he was in a situation that was getting a little iffy. And he said, I wanted to have, if I get something happens to me, so you could call law enforcement. The sad thing was I didn't know exactly where he was. And he was filming a Black Lives Matter group going into a drugstore and stealing. And they did assault you. A group of men got around him and beat him. And that was pretty horrid to me. And I felt completely useless. I was sitting there going, I can't help him. There's nothing I can do. I didn't even know what police department to call.
Well, there were LAPD everywhere. There's you calling. It was in downtown Los Angeles early on during the George Floyd madness. And you calling LAPD wouldn't have accomplished anything. At the time, the jewelry district of downtown Los Angeles was being looted, and it was not one of my brighter ideas in my journalistic career to go there. But there was a big Black Lives Matter protest that day, but that protest had been over for hours at that point. And yes, there were a lot of black people in the streets of downtown LA at that moment, but I would not refer to them as a Black Lives Matter group. It was straight up looting and chaos when that happened. And I certainly put myself in harm's way. Yeah, I got beaten up on the streets of downtown LA. But the looters were not smart enough to grab my phone, which managed to stream the whole thing. Granted, I put it in my pocket and the video shut off, but the audio kept playing and it was live, so people got to listen to me get the crap kicked out of me.
And they did. They did think they grabbed his phone, but they grabbed his extra
power,
battery,
power bank. Yeah, yeah. They weren't high IQ looters, and there were. It was pathetic that CVS or Walgreens, whatever it was. I saw a lot of people coming out of there with big rolls of toilet papers and paper towels. But there were some women who I think were looting the I don't know if it was the, not the drug aisle, maybe the makeup aisle, the cosmetics aisle. So the ones who looted the cosmetics aisle probably came out with something.
Yeah, I didn't. It was interesting.
Maybe. I don't know if it's worth it.
But what I'm saying is Josh has some very, he was also down in the Portland area during some of the, when they had the area that they, the protesters took over and they called it, what they call it, the, I can't remember, but they took it over and claimed they were the law enforcement for it. People were shot. People died. It
yeah,
was an ugly scene.
Chaz Chop in Seattle,
yes.
Which interestingly, I was just getting some notification about some street action, similar type of street action in Minneapolis going on right now. But yeah, I think people tried to set up a Minneapolis autonomous zone. I spent a week in the Capitol Hill autonomous zone or Capitol Hill organized protest in Seattle, whatever you want to refer to it as. And that place ultimately got shut down after there were one or two too many shootings, murders.
It was shocking how violent that was. When you were down there, of your videos were just stunning.
It got very violent, and it actually makes me think about how we're not totally immune to these problems that exist in Venezuela and Colombia. I'm not saying that Colombia is a bad country. I love going to Colombia. I love a lot about Colombia. And it's nothing like what it was decades ago when Venezuela was in better shape and Colombia was in worse shape. But the U.S. isn't immune to drug problems and gang violence. And it was a lot of both of that at Chaz Chop. The murder, I interviewed, kind of wish I followed up on that. I interviewed several local business owners who were affected, and affected is putting it lightly, by what was going on at Chaz. And I was also asking about the gang violence, and it hadn't all materialized. I think hours after I left was the final double murder or final murder. It might have been the only double murder that took place there. And basically everyone there was saying that it was gang warfare that was moving from nearby areas of Seattle to the edge or even inside Chaz. And then on top of that, you had all these homeless people who were occupying a park there. I think it's called Cal Anderson Park. And obviously, I'm from Los Angeles. Los Angeles is as affected as by homelessness and drug and gang activity as any city around. So all I'm saying is the U.S. isn't immune to these problems that I see in Latin America.
And the President Trump is discussing right now invoking the Insurrection Act over the protests in Minnesota that are going on currently. So it is.
I know there are a lot of people on the right who would like him to do so.
It's very interesting. Then at the same time, you have people on the left wanting the abolishment of ICE. So it's kind of it's an interesting. I think most people do not want people who are criminals arrested. They absolutely do not.
Venezuelans have some of the most interesting perspectives on ICE and Trump and everything that's going on related to that right now. One of my fixers who's my...
And explain what a fixer is for a non-journalist person listening.
A journalist who travels abroad and goes to an area where they need a local who speaks the language and guide them around and translate and set up interviews. That's a fixer, and I use fixers in different parts of the world, and I have a couple different, or even a few different fixers down there in Colombia by Venezuela. One of them is Venezuelan, and he had told me, I don't think I've published any of this yet, he had told me that he had been going through the process during the Biden administration years to get asylum or temporary protected status. I forget which one.
Hey, Josh, we only have a few seconds left. Let's talk about your fixer after we get a break from our sponsors.
Painting, we get it. Hiring contractors can be frustrating. Missed calls, no callbacks, endless waiting for even a price. We do things different. You can book your quote right on the spot. And to top that off, you will have a detailed quote and price before we leave. Painting is easier with Peak.
Hi, I'm Seth Peak.
And I'm Ryan Peak.
And we're the Peak Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peak Painting at peekpainting.com.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated, Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location. Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Friday and has a dump station for your RV. Learn more. Call Delta Liquid Energy 805-239-0616 or go online DeltaLiquidEnergy.com.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vealey, your host on Wednesday and Thursdays. Today I'm talking with Josh Friedman primarily about what is going on in Venezuela. He has been, he is a journalist. He was down on in Colombia at the border of Venezuela, interviewed 50 to 100 people and learned a lot about what is going on in the area. And you were telling us about what is going on with your fixer.
Yeah, the short of it was that he had gotten or was about to get permission. I think he'd gotten permission to move to the U.S. And that was canceled when Trump took office. And what he was saying is that even though he certainly would like to move to, granted, he'd love for Venezuela to be in much better shape and for him to be able to live in Venezuela, but he wanted to move to the U.S. But he said that when Trump captured Maduro, it was a worthwhile trade-off, that at that point he was okay with Trump, in a sense, canceling his own ability to move to and live in the U.S. merely because he was so pleased with Trump's move to capture Maduro.
Well, that is huge. It's more important to him that his country is cleaned up. I listened to interviews with a number of people from Venezuela that are currently living in the U.S., and there's a number of them that would like to go back to Colombia. Some just want to go back and visit their family. I mean, Venezuela. Some just want to visit their families. But there are a number that have said, if this can get cleaned up, I want to go home.
Yeah, I hear that frequently. And it's risky for many people to go back if, as we were mentioning earlier, if the colectivos or whatever kind of authorities there are get word or determine or go through their phones and figure out that they're critical of the government or even merely that they're living in the U.S., that might alone be too much of a risk for them to come back. So, yeah, there's certainly risks involved, but a lot would like to move back. Then also, touching back on this issue of ICE and immigration and criminality, I've heard repeatedly, including during some interviews, Venezuelans express an understanding for why Trump would do what he do, why Trump would not want Venezuelans coming to the country. I've heard repeatedly Venezuelans themselves talk about how they acknowledge that they don't always have the best reputation. For instance, a young lady told me just a few days ago how she acknowledges that Venezuelans don't have the best reputation in Colombia, and the fact that many Venezuelan criminals come into Colombia or come into the U.S. plays a huge part of that. And many Venezuelans will acknowledge that there are many Venezuelan criminals who have been let into or come into the U.S. So a lot of them are very conflicted on Trump. In a sense, they support what he's doing, but I also get the sense from a lot of Venezuelans that they're not too keen on his overall tough stance on immigration.
And I think there's a number, you know, there are people that everything is not the same. You have, as I said, the criminal, those that have committed crimes that people want removed. But then if you have someone that came here as a child and has lived here 30 years, there are a lot of people that believe those people should be able to stay. So there are two sides to this. It's not a black and white issue.
Yeah, there are a variety of sides to it.
And Venezuela, one of the problems that Trump was having with them also is they were refusing to take back people in their country. Is that changing now also, or do you know?
It might be too early to say. It seems like Delcy Rodriguez and the current Venezuelan government are under major pressure to comply with U.S. demands, whatever they are. And I don't know what came about it today, but I believe the opposition leader and Nobel Peace Prize winner, Maria Corina Machado, was meeting with Trump at the White House, which that might be a further sign to Delcy Rodriguez that she needs to basically do whatever the Trump administration tells her to do. So it's a little early to tell with a lot of things, but the sense I get from speaking with Venezuelans over the past week and a half or whatever it's been is that increasingly the Venezuelan government's in a position where they need to do what the U.S. tells them to do.
Yeah, I think they're very much in a position. I found this stunning that they were able to get into the country and grab Maduro on a military base and out without the deaths of any American soldiers.
It's incredibly impressive. And I don't want to take anything away from the strategy and execution that went into that military operation. It's pretty incredible. But there also seems to be a pretty widespread sentiment that Maduro was essentially sold out by his own people, our own guards, our own military. And one of the interviews that I conducted on the bridge that I've already published is the father of a female Venezuelan soldier, and he's insisting that almost no one in the military actually supported Maduro and actually supports the current government. And I've heard that from others too, but I'm not able to verify it.
And that's something that the U.S. has also said, that they had help from inside the military to get in and out safely, with the Venezuelan military.
That has come out. And the mere fact that Maduro had Cubans as his essentially personal protection team or unit, that probably showed that he did not have a lot of faith in his own military, or was very suspicious of his own military, or outright knew not to trust them.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think it's going to be a very interesting year. Are you going to be covering, if you get a chance, some of the more aggressive anti-ICE protests?
I don't know. Should we do something?
I actually think
you want to send me to one to cover them, or send me to some to cover them.
Minnesota would be right up your alley. What is happening there right now? And again, Trump is talking about calling it an insurrection, and the government is talking about having anti-ICE zones. Our district attorney Dan Dow had his office put out a statement today basically saying protesters that violate the laws, you can protest. Protesters are allowed to have protests. But if they're blocking roads, they're doing illegal activity, and they will be doing charges. And he also said an anti-ICE zone, you can't have one. It's against the law. The federal government has a right to have federal officers and agents in communities, and you cannot have anti-ICE zones. It's basically symbolic. It's not something that can happen. One of the things that I'm also noticing, I watch they have a number of places where they put these alerts. So they'll have an alert, for example, the alert will say, there's ICE at more a high school, and please go over. And they want the rapid responders to go over and try to keep ICE from being able to do anything. In this case, there were two sheriff deputies there for something different. And it was not ICE, it was sheriff deputies. So then about 2 hours later, they put out, oh, those were just deputies. And then they were showing a car, asking people to follow it. So what they do is they follow, they honk, they try to distract and cause problems. And about an hour later, they said, well, we determined that car wasn't ICE. But I'm noticing a lot of these, when they send the rapid responders over to, to try to help someone not get arrested, very often it has nothing to do with immigration. Which is getting interesting. No, Josh, I'd love you to cover some of those because I think it is the big news of the U.S. right now, what is happening with this fight between local law enforcement in some areas, for example, in Minnesota, where they do not want them arresting even criminal illegal immigrants. And they are fighting to keep ICE, trying to find ways to keep ICE out of Minnesota. And I think it's going to get to a breaking point in the next few months as the protesters block roads and attempt to block law enforcement. It could be one of the bigger things.
Maybe we can do some coverage of that.
And I want to thank you for bringing the different things. You've talked to us when you were in Ukraine, bringing us the information about
Colombia.
Actually,
very briefly on that note, I did spend a lot of time in Ukraine last year, and I'm always in contact with people in Ukraine. Ukraine is getting hit very hard right now, and it is extremely cold there. So there is pretty much a humanitarian crisis in Ukraine at the moment.
And I've heard a little bit about that because so much of the energy is out. People are having trouble staying warm. Josh, it's the end of our show. I want to thank you very much for coming on today.
All right. Thanks a lot, Karen. Good talking. We'll be right back.
This hour of Sound Off was brought to you by Mid-State Precious Metals across the parking lot from the movie theater in Atascadero. Honest, veteran-owned. Buy or sell precious metals with integrity. Monday through Friday, 10 to 3.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com. Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.